This is The Courier Talking Football. I'm Sean Hamilton, not Eric Nicholson. He's away this week. I don't know if he's sunning himself, but it's a very nice day, so he might well be. Might have the Speedos on in the back.
Oh, what a sight for so there is.
Yeah. Apologies for starting on a note like that. Actually, we were just speaking before we started there about starting off with Dundee United, and of course we will do that because... I mean, that's an absolutely massive game for both them and Raith Rovers. But that's not to say that Dundee and Saints don't have a big game coming up this week as well. But we'll get there. We'll get there in the end. I think natural place to start this week is with Dundee United and Raith Rovers and their epic showdown as the championship title race. It doesn't race towards its conclusion. It sort of seems to stumble along, but a massive game nonetheless. It's been spicy. Off the pitch in the build-up a wee bit with the Raith Rovers having a wee nibble about the ticket situation at Tannadice. We'll maybe touch on that as well. But I mean on the pitch we'll start there. I mean we've touched on this over the weeks, Jim. And actually here's me looking at Lee Wilkie across the desk and realising I've not even introduced him yet. we have a stranger among us today. Lee Wilkie.
I'm shadow here today. He's keeping the sun off me. You know?
Yeah. I'm sure everyone watching will have noticed that Lee Wilkie's sitting there and he needs no introduction, obviously. So, hello, Lee.
Hi.
good. But we'll come on to that. So, Jim, I mean, both of them, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, kind of stumbling along. And it could not be closer, a point in it. Raith Rovers have a game in hand, which, of course, means it's in their hands, really, what happens between them and the end of the season if they... They win all their games, they'll win the league. This one could not be much bigger, really. Lots of pressure comes with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to find out what Lee thinks on us, because, you know, unlike you and me, you know, we've knocked about a juvenile or junior or five-a-side level. This man's played at the highest levels, you know. So, I mean, there's all sorts of elements to this game. I mean, I think I was saying to somebody last night, I think these are the sort of games that separate the men from the boys. And I don't mean that in any insulting fashion, but I mean, you'll know yourself, there are guys in a dressing room that are bigger characters physically, but there are bigger characters mentally in every dressing room. Some guys kind of, you know, are not necessarily as inclined to be up for the heat of battle as some others, you know. Yeah. And I kind of suspect that the weekend at Tannadice for United and Raith really will come down to the guys that have got the biggest appetite for this. And of course, at the moment, the statistical odds favour Raith because of the three meetings so far this season, they've won two of them and they've drawn one. And I don't think they were undeserved ones, you know. So I think going into this, there's a tetchiness about it all, which is quite good, you know, from a fan's point of view, it's quite good. It goes way back.
You can't beat that.
It goes right back to the goalie being wiped out, doesn't it? And Andy Barrowman, the CEO at Raith, putting the naughty wee clip up and all the rest of it, you know, and then the ticket thing has wound things up a wee bit with Barrowman having to go to United and Luigi Capuano, United chief exec, coming back and having a wee pop back there. So there's a wee freeze on around this game, but where it'll all happen, you know, whether any of that actually counts at the end of the day, where it'll all happen will be on the pitch. And I think, you know, it's all very well talking about tactics and setups and formations, you know, whether you go 3-5-2 or whether you go 4-4-2 or whatever, you know. I think this comes down to the mentality of the squad on the day, because it will be a squad game, you know. Yeah. It comes down to the mentality, the desire, the hunger and the attitude of players to win. And at the moment, that's going in Raith's favour.
It is a wee bit. I mean, Jim touched on mentality being a factor there and quite clearly it will be. I mean, as in every football game to an extent, but I mean, one that's as high pressure as this one, you'll have been in similar scenarios in your career in dressing rooms. Is it talked about, the pressure factor, or is it something that people just leave alone and kind of try to ignore? Or?
It's a really tough one for the manager to manage that. I think you've then, going back to what Jim says, you've got to rely on players within that dressing room to sort of manage it.
Aye.
With the younger players, guys like Gallagher and Holt to a certain extent, you know, Doherty, all these players and what, these are when these players really matter for me. Like, you know, they've got to step up to the plate a little bit. And, you know, I'm not going to single anybody out, but I don't, you know, I think their form has been poor since January.
Yeah,
you know,
it's been,
but you could say the same.
I was
about
looking.
Race.
Actually, yeah. Look, I was looking at United, and really, I mean, I think the first bit of the season, and I think you could really cut this off probably mid-November. Up till then, they looked like a team that was going to pretty much scoosh it. They looked really comfortable. They were putting wins together, if you like. And since then, it's been very, very back and forward. So that's, I mean, most of the season, really, it's been a bit up and down.
Yeah, and I think that, again, comes back down to mentality. You know, when it's really the pressure's on, the players haven't really delivered. I mean, you look at Saturday's game against Inverness. Again, they needed a good start. They lose a goal early on.
Yeah.
The game against Dunfermline, when it was a massive game, and, you know, on TV, and they played really poorly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you could go back to quite a few games, all the race encounters. I mean, race, as Jim said, I've got had the better of all the encounters against Dundee United. So, for me, I think there's got to be an issue with the mentality of the players to a certain extent, because the form shows that. The form shows them at the start of the season, steamrolling teams, really, at times. Yeah. And then this season, you know, they've been losing early goals. You look back to the first part of the season, they hardly lost any goals in the first half.
Yeah.
A couple of goals.
Yeah.
And then this you know, since January, they're losing goals in the first half almost every week.
That's been a problem, particularly recently.
Yeah.
Hasn't it? I mean, funnily enough, I know, but we will look forward, but I've got the results in front of me just out of interest. Mm-hmm. And actually, you can pinpoint, it is mid-November, right enough, but really it's that defeat in the Challenge Cup away to Falkirk, where they got beat 4-2.
Mm-hmm.
And from that one, that's when the wobble, it really started. And form-wise, they've been all over the map a wee bit since then. Fortunately, so have Raith Rovers, which has allowed United to just about maintain where they are at the top. But, I mean, all of that talk about mentality and being kind of up and down results-wise and what have you, I mean, supporters, we know that there's been unease this season at United, particularly second half of the season. Going into this big game, they'll turn up anyway, of course they will.
Yeah.
But could be a nervy atmosphere as well, couldn't it?
I mean, you know, I think I said, I mean, I was having a look at your column, you know, touched on a couple of things that I thought were interesting in that, but I mean, you know, in my own column with the Courier last week, it said that the problem United is, I think the two Dundee, you know, I haven't covered football in the city for 30 years for the Beeb. I think the two Dundee crews are as hard to play before as any. I really do. I think, I mean, there are times I'll sit in up the back, you know, at danger at the back of the stand. And there are boys I was at school, you know, they hear them. And it's like, wow, you know, I just as well, you know, Dens, at least you're 100 yards away from that kind of. Tannadice sometimes a bit closer. And I think one of the problems with United has been this season is that the crowd turn quickly.
Mm.
You know, they get off to, they come out the trap slowly. They play with a lack of tempo. It's kind of easy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They get caught with a quick goal and the crowd turn.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads the players kind of just fractionally, you know, taking a wee bit kind of less time on the ball than maybe they want to kind of, you know, and playing the misplaced pass. And it becomes a vicious circle, I think, you know, or, and become self-defeating. And I think, you know, the only way really to stop that is to come out the traps very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Stop conceding those goals.
Which they haven't done for a while.
And stop the crowd getting on their back, you know?
The fans' behaviour, does that have an impact, Lee, when you're on the pitch? Can you pick that up if you're in the middle of a game and can you sense that sort of nerviness?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's so... That's the issue that United have just now, is that they're not using the fans to their benefit. They're allowing the fans to get restless, which then in turn puts pressure on the players and their lack of confidence, you know, on the ball and stuff like that. And it's a vicious circle. And they've got to go out in games in the first 10 minutes and win the fans over.
Mm-hmm.
Once they win the fans over, they'll get that lift from them.
Yeah.
And the game should hopefully take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But again, since January, they've not been doing that. And the fans, Dundee United fans, Jim's quite right. There's a lot of expectation from the fans. You know, they expect to be...
Particularly when they're in the Championship as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because they see Dundee United as a big club that should be in the Premiership, and they should be sort of strolling the Championship, which historically doesn't really get done. You know, you look at Hearts are probably the only ones...
Yeah.
And when United maybe got promoted before,
they
was quite comfortable. But every other year's always been pretty close.
Well, even Dundee last year. Eh?
Yeah, exactly. So it's But that still doesn't mean the fans don't expect that squad to get promoted from this division. You know?
I think that's the problem. Marrying up kind of, you know, the actual realities and expectations are two really different things. I mean, I had an interesting conversation with, you know, I mention him regularly, and I said, just as well Eric's not here, because Eric likes to have a laugh about it.
Is this Roger Mitchell?
I stay in touch with Roger Mitchell. Out in Spain these days. And he writes a great blog at the weekend.
We really should have a Roger Mitchell Clarkson every time he mentions
it. SPL when you were coming through, I'm trying to remember. Roger got that kind of love-hate relationship with Scottish football, because he was the man, he wanted, you know, he had a lot of great ideas. He wanted to kind of bring in SPL television, the clubs would own the television and all that. A lot of good ideas, but he kind of, you know, eventually left. And he's got this love-hate relationship with Scottish football. He hates it more than he loves it, you know. But I mean, but he wrote a really disparaging piece about fans the other day, saying, look, the problem is, but I think there's truth in this, in Scotland in particular. And I've got to be honest, I think this is a Dundee thing as well. People kind of wait to build you up, but they cannot wait to take the legs from you. And that happens to players, you know, it's that tall poppy syndrome, you know, they kind of wait to kind of, and that happens as a professional footballer. I mean, sometimes there's no escape. You go for a beer, you go for a pint, you go for a cup of coffee, you go for a fill the car up with petrol, and somebody's giving you it in the neck, you know. It's there are all of these things and more, I think, go to make up your mentality. But the key thing I think about this one, you know, no doubt we'll talk about Raith in a minute or two, but the key thing from United's perspective and Raith's, but is how Jim Goodwin, I think there's an acid test of Jim's managerial skills.
Yeah.
Not so much his coaching skills as the manager, how he keeps the guy's feet on the ground, how he maintains the tempo in training all week, how he kind of lightens the mood, you know.
Yep.
And also, you know, from a coaching and an actual tactical point of view, just how much they do. The last thing you want to do at this stage in the season is overload guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think over either way, instructions or actual physical work, there's a fine line, you know, because a lot of guys are carrying at this stage niggling injuries and just wee kind of wee tightnesses about the body and all the rest of it. So there's all of that stuff about the mood that he sets in the camp, I think. And then you're relying on what you said earlier on, Lee, the big characters and the guys with the really strong mentalities to carry along those who maybe are a bit younger or a wee bit more frail mentally than others, you know. So it's a massive week and it's a massive build-up to the game.
Yeah. Are players looking to a manager for something in this sort of scenario? Are they wanting someone from them directly?
To be fair, it'll depend. I mean, I sort of imagine younger players will.
Yeah.
But any of the sort of experienced players should be taken up by the scruff of the neck and almost just going with it themselves. So, every player's different. That's the thing. Some will need that, some will not. And again, Jim's right. The manager's got to.
It's just that we've all seen this. You know the film, the Oliver Stone film, Any Given Sunday, about American football? You've seen that with Al Pacino?
Yeah.
And he gives this stirring pre-match speech where all the players are going mental. Have you seen that sort of thing happen?
Yeah, you do get that. I mean, again, it just depends, but it's Craig Levein did lots of different things.
Right.
He would occasionally put just big A3 sort of bits of paper around the dressing room with information about the other team, or it might have even just been quotes from newspapers from the team that you're coming up against that have said something negative against the team or that, you know. So there's lots of different ways of getting around it, but to be fair, something like that never really affected me.
There would
be, you know, there was guys like Sean Dillon in my squad who would maybe get affected a little bit more about that, and he would think about things a little bit more, and some people are a little bit more laid back. So but again it comes down to the experienced players to influence that within the dressing room and try and settle those boys who are a little bit nervous down.
Were you just naturally ready to two-foot somebody like?
Yeah, all and then to be fair, the best days were when Levein would sometimes come up and say, "That striker you're playing against doesn't like it, so you can do what you like in the first 5 minutes."
Oh, free reign.
That was almost like a going to do.
I think he was one of the game's philosophers.
It was but that was back in the day before VAR and all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just put him in the front row of the stand. Yeah,
exactly.
That's one of the things that VAR's robbed us of, the dark arts of football, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a shame. Another thing to complain about. But you talk about, I mean, for instance, things getting put up on dressing room walls and that is, you know, that's with regards to Raith and the way that they've kind of promoted themselves this season, particularly on social media, actually, they seem to have made a decision at some point, I think possibly, maybe mid-season when they realise that there was a result against United in December, actually, where they beat them at Tannadice, I think they did. was it a draw or was it a win? I can't remember. December, yeah, they won at Tannadice. So they won 1-0 at Tannadice. I think at that point, that's probably the result where Raith went, we've got a chance here.
Definitely.
So, and from that point on, they seem to have embraced the wind-up as something that they can kind of indulge themselves in on social media. And again, I think back to the last game against United where Jack Hamilton absolutely nailed Walton, goalie, and then they put it up on social media the next day to kind of celebrate in it a little bit. Now, that is sort of dark art stuff, and it's a very modern version of it. It's the sort of thing that a manager might put up on a dressing room. Well, if you could put a tweet up, maybe pin an iPad to the wall, but who knows? But I mean, do you think that's an option? Because there has been some needle between the two sides.
Yeah, I mean, there has been needle, and most of that needle has come from Raith. And you know what?
United have sort of tried to take the high road, haven't they?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's understandable from Raith's point of view. I mean, they were never ever favourites for the league at the start of the season. United were, you know, red-hot favourites. Mm-hmm. They're the big club. You know, the Raith boys will be looking at them as big-time Charlies. I'm not saying they are, but, you know, that'll be the mentality of who they think they are. You know, they're European regular, they're a great illustrious history and all the rest of
that's
it.
The role Raith are playing.
That's the role Raith are playing.
They're the underdogs.
You've got to, you know, this is professional sport. This is, you know, I mean, this is about winning. That's the bottom line. It's about winning in professional sport. You know, there are loads. It's kind of like, you know, it's like football players. You'll have been brought up with boys that had loads. I mean, I always remember Davey Bowman saying to me at Tannadice, he was at school. I think Davey was at Tiny High. I'm not sure. He said, there were four guys in my class who were better players than me. Uh-huh. He said, but didn't they make it? Because each of them lacked something, you know, whether it was mentality, out in the drink on the Friday night, well, you know, a combination of things, you know.
Anything.
And so you use everything at your disposal. Uh-huh. And I think a lot of this is coming from Andy Barham. And, I mean, you know, fair play to them. They're reinventing a great old club, you know, who've been in the doldrums for a long, long time. We know what they went through previous to all this before the takeover. So they're reinventing them. They're using every trick in the book, everything at their disposal.
Yeah.
For United, it's do we get sucked into this? Uh-huh. Or do we adopt, as you say, do we take the moral high ground here and say, well, you know, fair enough, you have at you, you know, have at you, sir, do what you want, we'll, you know, we'll rise above this, you know.
Yeah.
The problem is you can rise above it or appear to rise above it publicly, does it get to you internally? Mm-hmm. And that's the key thing. And that's where the big carrot, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not going overboard here. I mean, I had a good chat yesterday with a good mate of mine who was a sports psychologist at Celtic and Motherwell at one time, you know, and that's his game. I mean, I think you can overdo it at times. I mean, there are guys in the dressing room that none of this stuff bothers. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't bother, you know. It depends on your mentality as a boy all the way through your life that you brought up to become a professional sportsman. Some guys just go on with it, on with it, you know. Mm-hmm. Other guys kind of go into the shell a wee bit and all the rest of it. So everything that surrounds this game will have a different impact on different people. And I think that's where... not just the manager, everybody, chief execs and everything, the whole tenor of a club can be set, you know, but, you know, you either ignore it, but, you know, quietly kind of park it at the back of your mind and think, well, right, we'll sort you on Saturday, you know, or you kind of, you go into a bit of a strop about it, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, after 95 or 97 or 99 minutes, depending on how much time we get on Saturday, we'll know exactly who's come out of this one the best, you know. Psychologically and physically as well, you know. And at the moment, you know, I mean, I've said all along, United, I think, have the best squad in the league, but they haven't run away with a league that I think they should have tied up by now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying they should have done a Hearts, but with the squad they've got and the players they've got, they should have had this league tied up, and they haven't. And Raith have beaten them twice, drawn once. So psychologically, there's a wee chink of armour.
Definitely.
A wee dent in the armour there, you know?
Absolutely. And footballing wise, Jim Goodwin has. I mean, he's always got decisions to make with regards to what he does with his team, but there's a more kind of obvious one with Kevin Holt thing going off. Now, he has been a key part of their defensive setup this season, which for a lot of the time has been good. Obviously, Declan Gallagher was missing for a while, but Jim Goodwin, when he was available again, was very, very quick to bring him back in and pair those two back up again. So, you know, losing Holt, it's a big change to an important area of the park, or one that Jim Goodwin has made a point of pointing out is important. So, a big chance for a young Ross Graham, isn't it?
Yeah, well, to be fair, Ross Graham's done really well every time he's came in. He's been quite unlucky, I think, that actually Gallagher and Holt have been such a strong combination, which quite rightly they are. Again, I don't know, going back to before the Inverness game, you could argue that Ross Graham should have been brought in at that point for me. Because Miller Thompson's, I think he's a great young player, but he's not a left back. You know, he's not a defender, he's an attacking player. So that was definitely something that I think the fans picked up on as well. You know, you could play Holt left back and bring Ross Graham in at centre half. But yeah, it's all ifs and buts after the game. They're in a far worse position now because obviously Holt's injured and McMahon looks like he's struggling as well a little bit. So they're in a real sort of defensive headache there. But Ross Graham will come in and do what he does, and he's very consistent for being a young player. So I think in that centre pairing with Gallagher and Graham, it's the wide areas they've got the issues for me, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, Graham, he made all the right noises when he came out of the team as well. Jim Goodwin pointed out that, you know, he'd been at the door, not happy about coming out of the team. I mean, that's a hungry young man who does that, you know, who makes a point of saying, why are you taking me out when you've got a Scotland internationalist who's coming back into the team? So in that regard, I mean, Dundee United should have a hungry player there. But as you say, other issues as well. And then at the other end of the park, we've spoken all season about what does he do up there, and obviously he has his players like that. He will play. We've mentioned Cajoe quite a few times as being a sort of wild card option that Jim Goodwin hasn't seemed to play very frequently. He hasn't used it a lot.
So there's probably a reason for that.
They're always
very inconsistent, and you know, well, along with Middleton, guys like that, I think that's what you're dealing with, is players who aren't performing week in, week out at a certain level. And it's, you know, the manager's got to try and go within training. What's happening? Who's showing up well in training? This is the one thing I think sometimes fans sort of miss, is, you know, players like Cujo or Miller Thompson, they could have worked on 11v11 in training, and Miller Thompson's done excellent at left back. You know, you miss things like that as a fan. So there's, the manager's got to go with that as well in his selection for a Saturday. And that's up to the players to show who are out the team to get into the team. You know, I've said this to players before, a lot of them will go in a little bit of a sulk if they're not playing. Well, you know what, it's up to you to show in training. That's your platform to show you're good enough to get in that team. So every single one of those United players should be showing this week that they're good enough to play against Raith Rovers and show that mentality in training. If you can't show that mentality in training, you're not going to show it in a sort of top of the league clash against Raith.
Aye. I mean, but there is a contrast there with regard to how each team's season is being perceived as well, despite the fact that they're broadly similar in terms of points and all that stuff. But Raith very much are the team that everybody's talking up as being having a good season, whereas United is starting to wobble a little bit. So, I mean, do you think that, I mean, there should be a more general air of positivity around Rovers, you would have thought, than United going into this one?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are two things, you know, in favour of either side. The one that's in favour, well, three, I suppose, because it's in United's hands. You know, I mean, if they win every game, they win the league.
It's in Raith's hands.
It's in United's hands at the minute, because, you know, Raith have played a game less.
Yeah,
got a point more. So if United beat them on Saturday,
it's Raith.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. If Raith win all their games, they'll win the league.
They do. That's why United have got to beat them on Saturday.
Yeah.
My apologies, Sean. You're right. I was about to mention the goal difference, which is almost 3-1 for United. 36 of a goal difference against Raith 13. But that's why the kind of, I think I said in the comment the weekend, the two games are crucial against Inverness and Raith coming up. Now, bluntly, they've blown it against Inverness. We, you know, losing an early goal. And they played well. They played more positively, certainly in the second half. And Graham came on, of course, after Holt went off, you know. But that was a massive opportunity, and it's going to pile even more pressure on them now, you know. So they really have to beat Raith. They beat Raith on, what, 62 points, is that right? 59, 62 points. Raith are four behind, but still, you're right, still have that game in hand. I get myself mixed up.
No, Raith have got a game in hand,
So,
I don't think it'll be against theirs.
I mean, from a Raith Rovers perspective, you know, and the thing is as well, who was it came back? Was it Stanton that came back into the Raith side that's given him a bit of lift as
well? Stanton being missing coincided with them having a wobble. Around about December, January.
Signing of Rudden's given them a wee kind of boost as well, hasn't he?
But, I mean, definitely Stanton come back into the team has again coincided with them finding form again. So, I mean, clearly an important player for them.
I was going to say to Lee, I mean, do you think there's much between the teams in terms of individual ability? Because the league table doesn't seem to, I mean, it's all very well for me to say, having watched mostly United this season, I've seen Wraith about three times, a couple of times in telly, and to me, United have looked individually the better side. But you know, that was certainly from the start of the season when they went off on that terrific run.
Yeah.
But they've dipped considerably since that, you know, so I'm actually not sure anymore.
Yeah.
How much extra talent they've got by...
It's a really tough one because I do think United have got a stronger squad. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be derogatory against Wraith because...
Nah, go on. I'm only joking.
I mean, quite a lot of games in the season I've thought they've been quite lucky in terms of getting that result.
For a lot of late goals.
I went through a period where they were scoring in the last few minutes, last 5 minutes, and you just got that feeling, you're just thinking, this can't go on for the whole season. Yeah. You can't keep getting sort of fortunate like that. But then... United have never took control from those sort of moments, you know, and it's been their own fault. But the one thing that I think United fans will quite rightly focus on Dundee United, and they're obviously playing poorly, so there's a lot of negativity towards the squad just now. Mm-hmm. But Wraith have done exactly the same. Their form's been poor since January.
Yep.
They've not punished Dundee United when Dundee United slipped up either. So there's obviously a mentality issue there that this set of Wraith players, are struggling under these conditions as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So United need to realise that the pressure's on them as much as it is United. Even though Wraith have played the underdog card quite well lately, they're wanting promotion, and that group of players want promotion, but they're not dealing with it in the right way.
Yes.
So United need to sort of swing that on them and say, look, this group of players is struggling, let's get at them. And again, going back to Goodwin, getting the team up for it so that they're taking control of that game in the first 5-10 minutes and not allowing Wraith to get any sort of advantage, you know, and that's one thing that they just simply haven't done that properly. So, there's a definite sort. It'll be really interesting against Wraith. I just hope Goodwin goes quite positively and the players react to it, because if they don't, I fear the worst.
Mm. Prediction? Can we trouble you for one?
I've got a feeling this one's going to be a draw as well.
You think?
Nil-nil. You know, having watched it, I just think Wraith are going to be so fired up for this. I'm not saying United won't either, but I get a sense that there's not a panic in their ranks at Tardis. You know, it's not going to be like the Smiths panic on the streets of Dundee. It's not quite that, but I just kind of sense they've lost their way a wee bit, and there's an element of uncertainty about Tardis.
I think defensively is the one concern, the major concern that I would have, because I think all season that's been the bedrock of whatever success they've had has been defensive. And, you know, we've spoken loads of times about how few goals they're conceding. And, I mean, that was true at a certain point. I mean, it's not changed massively, but it's looking a good bit more wobbly now than it has all season. And you chuck in a couple of enforced changes required, and that's where I'd be slightly concerned if I was a United fan.
Really, I mean, as I said, back to those wide areas, Grimshaw hasn't been in great sort of form the past few while. I think he was obviously at fault for the goal on Saturday.
Yeah, he was turned very easily.
And you got yourself out of position, really. Mm-hmm. Miller Thompson again isn't a defender, he's playing there, so I would actually hope that McMahon gets back in and Miller Thompson can play higher up in a more natural position and allow him to go and show what he's good, you know, he's a great attacking young player, simple as that, and Dungeon United need to get the most out of him. Holt's a massive miss. He's been such a big player in terms of his defensive duties, but also the goals he's came up with and scored in the early parts of the season more so. So, it'll be interesting to see what they do.
You're right, aggression's what you want, isn't it? Right from the off.
Yeah.
Go for it.
It's hard to see how either of these two teams surprise each other. Uh-huh. There's no anything, we were talking about Cujo being a kind of bit of a wild card. I like him, and I understand what Lee's saying about, you know, at that age, by and large, you're always going to get inconsistency. Messi was inconsistency at that age. Well, not quite as much. You know, I just can't see anything different that emerges. There's nothing different going to emerge from the squad. You've not got somebody in either of the squads that you're going to pull that the other squad doesn't know anything about. Uh-huh. And I don't see anything that is going to kind of, in the United squad, is going to tear Wraith to pieces and vice versa. So it's going to be a tight game. I think mentality is going to have a huge amount to do with it. And the start is going to have a huge amount to do with it. You're right, I mean, the late Wraith goals, you know, for a big chunk of the season were quite astonishing. But to a great extent in this game, you make your own luck, don't you? You know, and
yeah.
and Wraith had that ability to kind of keep going to the end of every game. And the very fact that they've beaten United twice and they've drawn once with them, I think there's warning signals in that, you know. Yeah. And particularly at this stage in the season where, you know, you're no far away from being over the firing line, you know, and there's injuries and there's niggles and there's wee things going on in players' heads and all the rest of it. I think it's not even about tactics or anything, it's about the strongest characters and the guys that have got that supreme kind of will to win when basically you're breathing at your backside and the lungs are searing and the legs are heavy and all the rest of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I just have this feeling that it could be a draw.
I was just going to say that. Nil from Jim then.
I mean, yeah. It's,
okay.
There's a good chunk of me that does think that as well, but I would like to be positive and sort of go with Dundee United scoring pretty early and,
yep.
you know, it all working out for them and getting some sort of 2-1 win or something like that. But again, it's Wraith will be quite happy to sort of be a little bit more defensive mm-hmm. on this because... Yeah. They also probably have watched Dundee United and watched them and realised that they don't move the ball that quick at times mm-hmm. than they should do, you know. So they're going to play to that as well. So
yep.
it's down to how United react to that and how they deal with a team wanting to sit in a little bit and hit yep. them on the counter.
Okie doke. Mm-hmm. Interesting one. It will be. Do you know what? I'm supposed to be going to Dundee and St Johnstone. I'll wait to talk about that. But God, I'm almost tempted to get myself a tannery instead.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a game. But anyway, Premiership. So Dundee, we'll go there next. Still well and truly in that battle for a top six place, with a game in hand on Hibs
mm-hmm.
And a Tayside derby. Are we allowed to call it that?
No.
it's an intriguing one, that, isn't it? You know?
I mean, yeah, I know that. I've got my own thoughts on that.
I don't think we've heard from Lee Wilkie on the Tayside Derby controversy yet. So come on then, let's have you.
It's not a derby for me.
No,
not in the slightest. I mean, St Johnstone fans probably want to turn it into a type of derby because there's not a derby for it. But the derby is Dundee United.
Uh-huh.
Dundee St Johnstone is just another game for me, really.
Uh huh.
I don't remember. I think it was Liam McLeod, my old colleague at Bebop, phoned me up and said, is United and Arbroath, is that a Tayside derby? Now that I think about it, I thought, I'm not even sure.
See, this is the interesting factor for me, because obviously you've got teams that have their, you know, their derby, and yeah, you know, Dundee United are absolutely, that is the derby, if you like. But I mean, you see, all around football, that there are lesser derbies, if you like, between teams that are local to each other.
Inter and Juve, a derby in
Italy. There's various different kinds of derbies. I just wonder why. I wonder why. You know, and this is an innocent question, but I wonder why so many people from Dundee are so against this idea of it being a derby of any sort. Mm. Why the vehemence about it? Why does it upset you so?
It doesn't bother me. I mean, I've tended to call it a derby. I think you know, we'll call it a Tayside. I'm not sure we'll call it a Tayside. I don't like that old kind of phrase, that Tayside. It doesn't mean much to me. But
does it bring to mind Tayside Regional Council?
Yeah, I like the idea of Tayside Region. You know, like that. But I mean, I don't. If somebody say to me, you know, where are you from? I wouldn't say I'm a Taysider. You know, it's not that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not like being a kind of a Merseysider or something. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But anyhow. But no, I mean, but you know, any more to the point, is it a derby? Yes, so, you know, it's more of a derby in Dundee Motherwell. I think intriguingly, the fact is, of course, they've got Motherwell the week after that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then the Rangers game that we were all set to go, and that's sandwiched in between time and finishing at Aberdeen. So, from Dundee's point, it's all to play for. Dundee, it really is. I mean, it's been a tremendous season for them. I think anybody at the start of the season. You know, who predicted this, a lot of people would have said, you know, off your head, you know, mm-hmm. we'll be hoping to be just above the playoff place, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And Doc, I mean, you really can't speak highly enough about what Tony Docherty has done
mm-hmm.
at Dens this season. I mean, he you know, he's been a motivator, he's been a manager, tactically pretty smart, you know. Reba, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of Dundee's scouting system and how they kind of work internally with each other in terms of spotting players, but...
Mm-hmm.
to build and assemble a squad the way they've done.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely remarkable, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's also a testimony to this whole, the concept that, it takes time to build teams and all the rest of that. He's done it very quickly.
He certainly has.
This notion it takes 2 and 3 years, people with 3 and 4 and 5 year plans and all the rest of that.
Mm-hmm.
They've blown Dundee, have blown that out of the water, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the word that always gets used at the start of seasons when new players are coming in is gelling. It takes time for new players to gel and all that. And I mean, when you look at Dundee, the teams that that Tony Docherty is putting on the park, I mean, there are some familiar faces in there that have been around for a couple of years at least, but always a good few. Who he's been brought in. This gelling factor's never seemed to be a thing, really.
I think the one key thing for me is that it's been based around some decent loan signings as well. You know what I mean? He's already made
that's
point.
Hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, obviously, you just need to look at Beck. Beck is probably the standout for that. They've probably got the most loan signings out of the clubs in that division. And they've done it pretty well.
I think they maybe get 10.
Yeah, I think they might have. Docherty's already said that you can't just come into a division like that, sign a whole squad of new players and expect them to all sort of gel together, you know, which is right. So then you've got to have some sort of guys that you've signed, a few loan signings here and there. Not every single one of them are going to come in and play well. That's just the way loan signings are. That's the way it goes. So, but I think that he's got the balance spot on for me.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of young talented players in there. He's got some experience chucked in with Shaughnessy and McGee and boys like that. But still Portales and that. So it's, again, he's got that balance, right? And he's not going to have an issue for next year. He's just going to have to think about who he brings in for next year. And that's probably been going on behind the scenes for the past few months even. That he's going to be deciding, again, there'll be a mixture of loan signings. I don't think there'll be as many as this year. There'll be a few more permanent signings, but again, he's going to have his work cut out with trying to get the right players in.
Well, I think the thing is now, without kind of looking ahead to what's coming up, I think the thing is you're almost you aren't able to look ahead now because Dundee, they're safe. I mean, they're looking for top six as opposed to anything else.
Yeah.
For next season, they suddenly become a much more attractive club for players to sign for on a traditional basis.
Definitely.
You know, do a couple of year contract or a 3 year contract or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas this season, if you've been going to guys and saying, we're offering you 2 years at the Dens, you might be thinking, just stop, look at them historically, been a bit of a yo-yo club in recent years, do I want to do that? All of a sudden, people are sitting up and taking notice.
Uh-huh.
There's at one time, United would have been the go-to club for a lot of players from outside the city or elsewhere.
Yeah.
History was well known and all the rest of it, you know. Now, your agent's saying, there's a Scottish club, who are they, Dundee? Well, they've got Gordon Strachan as kind of like, director of football, Gordon Strachan's there as,
technical
director. So I have to say as well, that's why I'm saying I don't know the ins and outs of kind of the recruitment at Dens, but I suspect that Wee Strachan's played a major part, just the name alone.
Yeah, definitely.
Just the name alone, you know, how many people can pick the phone up to, Jurgen Klopp, or Strachan can do that sort of thing, and that's a massive... That's a massive thing for the club. So, I mean, in terms of what he's assembled, been a great season. I think one of the biggest things, and you'll know as a central defender, I mean, I think one thing you want as a central defender, obviously, you want a solid goalie behind you.
Uh-huh.
And I think for the first time in a long time, they've had, particularly in Carson. I mean, he's had a couple of bloops. Every keeper has that. But by and large, he's been a solid keeper.
Yeah,
that's been important,
Very good signing, More so, again, the start of the season, he was very solid. He's had a few sort of blips here and there, but that's just keepers in general for you, I think.
Who was your favourite keeper to play in front of?
Big Rab Douglas at Dundee.
Rab
was very, you knew what you were going to get from Rab, and he was, he was a really level-headed type of guy to be in the squad with as well, so, I need to go for Rab.
So, I mean, in terms of Dundee, in the context of how their season's going and looking for this top six space, I mean, it's a away at St Johnstone, but you're still, given St Johnstone struggles this season, you'd be targeting that one, wouldn't you? As a three-pointer, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, St Johnstone's form really has been pretty up and down, hasn't it? You know, they've had no sort of real decent form, and I think that Levine being in there, he's trying to get them safe, basically, to rebuild them for next year,
exactly.
Which is quite right. But so that and its... itself sort of tells you that Dundee should have more than enough to go and beat a team like St Johnstone, really, because Dundee's form and on their day, Dundee, I think, are a very good team.
That's really the thing with them, isn't it? We've briefly touched on this before, but Dundee, there seems to be... Maybe this is related to having lots of players gelling and stuff like that, but when they're at their very best, yeah. they're up here, there seems to be a gap between when they don't turn up. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a big gap yeah. because mm-hmm. they can be so good
yeah.
that it looks a little bit up and down at times. But, I mean, if Dundee turn up, bottom line, St Johnstone are struggling at the bottom of the table, mm-hmm. Dundee should be going away with 3 points from this one. I can't get away from that if they're looking for top six.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think you're right, and I think that gap that you're talking about when Dundee on their day uh-huh. are very good. When they're not, I think that's just the experience at that level uh-huh. And something that I think Docherty will improve on next year. He'll get a couple more experienced faces in there.
Yeah.
You forget that Dundee squad's still pretty young.
Yeah.
You know, you look yeah. at their midfield, and when things maybe aren't quite going for you,
right.
that lack of experience comes into play, I think. Mm-hmm. Again, boys like Cameron have done excellent. Boateng has done excellent. You know, McCowan, but they're still all young, yep. fairly young, inexperienced at that level. And the really good thing about Dundee is that all these players will be far better players next year.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, they're just going to keep getting better and better over the next 2 or 3 years. So,
one of the things that strikes me, and I mean, you're right, there's loads of loan deals and all the rest at Denge, but I think...
Well, we can give you a list of them if you want. Well, so there's loans, the loan deals that are ending in the summer. Owen Beck, obviously, is in there. And you've got Owen Dodgson, who's from Burnley. Mm-hmm. Zach Robinson, Dara Costello, Michael Mellon, Malachi Boateng, mm-hmm. Aaron Donnelly, John McCracken, Baka Yoko, and Ricky Lamy as well. But I think yeah. he'll end up staying anyway,
yeah.
how you would have thought. But, I mean, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's 10 in total ending mm-hmm. in the summer. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, opportunity for...
One of the things that strikes me that Dundee seem to have done is they've... I mean, I'm a big believer. It's not just about signing talent. You want good characters in your dressing room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not just talking about, you know, big mentality. I'm talking about guys that are... So you're talking about Big Rab earlier on. Yeah, just big, exactly. solid characters. Good characters, you know, guys that are kind of stable and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, like a laugh and all the rest of you. It can be a bit wild at times, but they've just got a kind of... They're grounded, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of strikes me that this Dundee squad kind of... are a bit like, I mean, in terms of this game, I mean, they've outscored Saints almost 2-1, haven't they? Defensively, yeah. different. I mean, it's actually quite alarming when you look and see the number of goals they've conceded, and saying that there's been there was the likes of the 7 against Celtic uh-huh. involved in that, you know.
Yeah.
But but by and large, it's been, you know, they're still on with the shout, yeah. I think, because Hibs kind of Hibs are up and down, you know, consistency-wise. So it's and it's a straight shoot between, you know, Dundee and Hibs for that. That top six spot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
again, Dundee win all their games, they'll be in the top six.
That's right.
Again, you know, it's up to them.
Tough ones here. I mean, you're obviously they've got Rangers to come who are battling out for the Premiership, and you're finishing against Aberdeen is the last one before the split.
Yeah,
it's up at Pittodrie on the 13th of April. Now, who knows? Well, yeah, the Dons right. will have a new manager in by that time, what the story will be there. Yeah.
The two
could be fighting to avoid relegation as well, because
I think for everyone at the bottom of the league, the longer Aberdeen go without a manager, the better,
yeah.
to be honest with you. I mean, for Dundee, obviously, the St Johnstone this weekend, that'll be their primary focus. But mm-hmm. but after that, they've two home games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rangers is one of them, admittedly. But Motherwell first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think we were talking about supporters having an impact at Tannadice potentially, one way or the other. But I mean, for Dundee, it's a different vibe, and you know, I know it's mm. one of those things where the fans can help, but they can, yeah. mm. they can, they really can.
Yeah, I think that looking at those next two games, it's, you know, it's 6 points really.
St Johnstone, Motherwell.
Yeah, that would. If they got 6 points here, that would be mm-hmm. great for them. I mean, you don't want to be trying to get anything against Rangers or even going to Pittodrie. I know that Aberdeen have been poor, but you know, there's always going to be a point where they'll improve at some stage. Whether it's now or it's next season.
just thinking, you've played for both. I said earlier on, I think the crowd, you know, 30 years of being behind a microphone, watch it. Who's the toughest crowd to play? Is it Denge or Tannadice?
I mean, I'll be completely honest. They're both. Really, really yeah. similar, and that they can be so good for you,
yeah.
or so bad,
which is mm-hmm. again, unfortunately, what United find themselves in just now. And Dundee are in a different sort of, you know, they're going pretty well, and there's a lot of positivity about their squad, so they're in a different situation. But yeah, it can be worked both ways. Yeah.
It's funny, as you get older, I mean, like, because I've done it, you know, on the terrace long before I was involved in journalism. I stood there and shouting ball like a maddie, you know, 16, 17, all the rest of it. But as you get older, you quite quickly
week,
start,
week about, was think, it?
Why?
At
you
the
know,
time.
Well, I mean, you know, traditionally, kind of, you know, as a laddie, I went week about. Well, yeah. I also went, because my oldest brother, well, oldest but only brother, was 30 years old, I used to get taken to see the Celtic a lot. So I had a, I had a tripartite kind of upbringing in terms of football. But kind of, I tended to go, you know, to United a lot. But also, I went week about. If United weren't playing, I didn't go to see them. I was at Dens as well. But I think, I mean, you know, I'm giving you two a lot of years as well. I mean, when I was at schools, Dundee were still, I was at Lawside, so the nature of the class, it was kind of, you know, mainly Dundee, loads of Celtic.
Oh, there would have been some Perth boys in there.
About four United fans in the class, you know, so generationally, I've witnessed a fairly big change. Dundee would have been traditionally, you know, guys of my age will say, Dundee traditionally would have been the biggest supported side by a long way. I mean, my old man was, you know, he stopped going to football. It was one of the reasons I used to go with my brother occasionally to see the Celtic. My brother, old man, had stopped going to see the football.
Yep.
But traditionally had been, as he used to put it, Dens for thrills, Tannadice for blood and snores. You know, he'd been brought up in the era of going to see Dundee when the boys at Billy Steele played for him. Mm-hmm. You know, my old deputy head, Jerry Fallon, at Lossie, played one of the great Dundee sides. So, you know, it's interesting that in a city of this size, none of the two clubs have ever, or should I say, the two clubs have never managed to have a long period of joint kind of dominance with another challenge. You've never had the two of them really doing well. It's always been one doing well, one struggling, you know, and maybe that's because of the size of the city. I mean, you know, as a laddie, you know, I grew up when Dundee was a bigger city than Aberdeen. It always topped Aberdeen by 1,000 or so, you know, 180 or 1,000. Mm-hmm. Now, if you threw a blanket over Greater Dundee, you've probably still got a couple of 100,000 people, you know. But effectively, you've almost got like two Paisleys trying to support two professional clubs, you know. It's one of the arguments, isn't it, for a joint club that you would probably match in Aberdeen or something like that. And it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And I doubt if we'd want to happen, you know. But anyway, I've got myself distracted there. I like to get in on that sort of stuff, you know. But I mean, from Dundee's perspective, I think it's been a great season. They should beat Saints at McDermott Park, you know, form wise and all the rest of it. There's a great test of all managers at this stage in the season, but one of the things that all managers are also doing at this stage in the season is there's some managers, I think, who will actually be wondering if they're in their jobs next season, even at this stage, you know. And there are others like Craig Levein who I'm pretty absolutely certain will be, because he's there to rebuild.
This at the weekend, so this is a game between two teams whose managers know they will be there.
Absolutely, that's right. And already Craig and Doc will be looking ahead. I mean, they'll be well in the planning stages already.
Yeah.
They've been making contact for months with, you know, about loan players or guys coming to sign on a permanent basis and all the rest of it. They'll have had a look at what they've got. Doc's situation different, 10 going. Craig's different as well, in the respect there'll be loads of guys that are out of contract.
Absolutely.
That he doesn't want to keep. He wants to move on.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, just quickly on St Johnstone as well, then, since they're the other half of this match that we're talking about. I mean, just as Dundee will be kind of targeting 3 points from this one, I think if you look at St Johnstone's remaining fixtures, one of them being away to Hibs and the other one at home at Killie, who've done really well this season, if you're going to target them, any of them for 3 points, you probably are looking at this one more so than the other two. So in that regard, you know, you would expect St Johnstone to have a go.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Surely.
He hopes.
Yeah.
Please.
I don't know. I mean, it's a tough one because Levein he'll probably be focusing on the defence.
Oh, it's always, you know, it'll be pragmatism.
Yeah, and he'll be wanting to make sure they're as solid as they are. And I wouldn't be surprised if he would be delighted by a 0-0 from that sort of game,
think, to be honest with you, if you're looking at St Johnstone, really, I it's one of those situations where it's so tight down there, and I think they're only a point ahead of Ross County at the moment, who are in the playoff spot. Expecting anything to be settled before the split is probably daft.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those ones that will take time and it'll run on in. But I mean, a couple of things that Craig Levein's got on his plate for this one. One being we had confirmation from him yesterday. Mm-hmm. Having spoken to him that Sven Sprangler's season's finished.
He's gone, isn't he, for the season?
He's away back to Austria. Got injured against Celtic, and he's gone back to Austria for an operation. So he's had surgery, medial and he'll be out until the end of the season. Medial ligament, it's medial, yeah. So he's a grade 3 tear, apparently, was the thing. So he's had surgery. We'll not see him again. That's a blow. As you know, the way that St Johnstone have been playing, and particularly in recent weeks, Spangler was making more of an impact. Right. He's making his presence felt more than he had been previously. And he is your kind of destroyer type. Mm, so
St Johnstone don't miss him. Wasn't he? Any time
he's played more central, really. They'll miss him. So he's going to need, and actually he made the point of saying this, so the likes of... Likes Connor Smith, who they signed from Hearts in January, and Max Kacheriavi, who's been kicking about for a wee while there. He's going to need a bit more aggression and fire from these boys. He said it publicly yesterday. So, tough one for them, but a chance for these guys as well.
I think there's a couple of things you can do in life. You can make players quicker, but not by much. You can't turn a cart horse into a sprinter. You can shave bits off, but I'm not sure you can make people more aggressive.
Right.
I've never really believed that. You can ask them to be, you can try and fire them up, but I think as a footballer, you've either got that kind of that destructive tendency, you know. It's like school, isn't it? You knew the boys are fight with the boys not a fight with you.
I think it goes back to you saying that, you know, I was the same as well. I played with a lot of players who were better players than me, and they didn't have that, whatever it was. And a lot of it is this determination and aggression that gets you. Gets you over, you know, negative things during games, whether it's a sort of coming up a player against a player that's giving you a really tough moment, and you just think, right, I'm going to need to do something here, and you think out of the box or that. But it's,
you actually see it in young players. I mean, I go and help out coaching with my young lads team at the moment. He's 9, so you can see it even in kids at that age. There's certain types who get their excitement and their thrill. You can see their joy from a really hard tackle or a challenge, and they love defending. You can see it in them. And then other ones don't want that. They want nothing to do with it whatsoever.
I think you can grow. I mean, I think at that age you can grow into it. You know, I mean, you kind of. Yeah, I mean, I know. I mean, you know, I mean, my oldest one, who's 31, 32 now, he went right through the ranks at the Dens, and there was laddies he played with, kind of. He played with Benny, you know, Kilbenny. You just knew the boys that had that kind of. I mean, I remember going to a game at, I think they played when he was under 16, to play at Stennis Muir one day.
Yeah.
And this old guy in the turn said, "Oh, that big lad up here, he's on loan for Celtic, you know." And I think early on, Benny clattered them, then Laurie, who was a goalie, clattered them, and then Benny clattered them again. 10 minutes later, the boys up the tunnel, you know, I mean, some players have just got
that
aggression. But I think, you know, like I say, you're young lad's age, that'll come. You know,
it does, but I mean, the point is, you can see the certain young players who they'll celebrate a tackle. They'll love that. Sprangler's one of these players. Exactly. He enjoys that.
He likes it.
Yeah.
And the fans love him because of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's probably what Dundee United have been missing a little bit, going back to them. But it's these players, I think they're sort of few and far between nowadays compared to, you know, what it was like before. And again, the game's moved on, it's more technical, VAR's in place, there's not so many opportunities for that to create an influence as much. But it still makes a difference in the game of football, that little bit of determination and aggression and willingness to win.
Yeah, just finally on Saints, I think that mentioned VAR briefly earlier in relation to how it's killing the dark arts of football, if you like. But St Johnstone last week after our podcast made a point of going public with the fact, like Motherwell previously, that they are not happy with VAR and its operation in Scotland. They've had a meeting with Crawford Allen and they've handed him a collection of clips basically saying, what's going on here?
Is that what tipped him over the edge? Because he's resigning, isn't he?
Well, it could well be. You never know. Regardless of whether you think, as I do, that VAR's not going anywhere, we're going to be stuck with it, unfortunately. But the one thing that can change with it is how it's managed and how it's used and the criteria by which it can be used. But for St Johnstone to come out and say something publicly against it, I mean, for me, you'll have your own opinion, I'm sure, but I mean, do you think that's a smart thing to do for fans who are particularly with a team that's struggling like St Johnstone, maybe thinking about whether they're going to have a season ticket next year? Do I want to come back and watch this? Especially with VAR, for St Johnstone to put their hand up and go, we don't like this. Mm-hmm. That kind of lets fans know that they're aware of it. They're aware of their concerns as well.
Yeah. I think they want it to improve, mm-hmm. you know, and the thing is, if you just sort of accept it and say it's okay when it's not, then it's never going to...
Nothing will change,
yeah. I mean, as I say, we're going to be stuck with it, but I think there has got to be a lot of improvement for next year. Again, you could talk about this forever, you know, really, but it's coming from a team, like you say, St. John's, mm-hmm. they're not doing so well themselves, it's maybe slightly odd, but yeah, it's... They're only being honest, I suppose. I imagine if you were to speak to every single club players, they would be saying the same things.
Well, I think you can, with Craig Levein at St. Johnstone, I think it's safe to say he's decided to do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Craig Levein's that sort of manager.
Exactly. That's right.
Isn't he?
You remember that when his time at Tannadice, where you
yeah, had absolutely. Yeah.
Against the Rangers game, wasn't it?
Exactly,
we were never going to win that day, and he had a real blaster. I mean, I think fans want clubs to speak up for them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know what Saints have said, we're putting a letter into SFA, is exactly what Saints fans are saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about kind of half a dozen Saints, everybody's saying it. Everybody in the game is saying it. I mean, VAR was brought in, as I recall, to address clear and obvious errors. Mm-hmm. And now we seem to be using it to... I've got some sympathy with referees. When people talk about we want consistency, because the problem is there are never, ever two tackles or two jumps for a ball mm-hmm. or two incidents in a park that are exactly the same. They're similar, but they're not exactly the same. Was that a dangerous, reckless tackle? Did it endanger an opponent? Well, the foot was kind of, you know, half a foot off the deck in that instance, or it was 9 inches, or it was... You know, it's always different. And that's where ultimately it always comes. It still comes down to the referee's opinion. The problem mm-hmm. is now it's coming down to the guy in the booth in Glasgow's opinion. Mm-hmm. And referees either have to have the courage of their convictions to see. The problem is we don't know what's going on internally. We don't know if somebody is then saying to a referee, right, you got the shout from VAR and you stuck with your decision. We think you were wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, because ultimately it's all there things, as a need.
All of these things will be part of the pressure that referees are feeling. But I think the one thing that certainly can be improved upon, has to be improved upon, is how how things are communicated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's to both, mm-hmm. you know, managers in the dugout mm-hmm. and supporters in the stands as well. Fine, because at absolutely. The moment, the way it is, I mean, we had at the last Dundee St. Johnston game at Dens Park, mm-hmm. for instance, we had Tony Docherty and Craig Levein. Dundee got a penalty, but neither one of them knew which side it was being checked at mm-hmm. at that point until it was given.
That's right. Yeah. And that's looking at each other silly. Like, that one is not use it for me.
And that, to me, is crazy. You can't have that. And then they don't know. You've got punters in the stands who don't have a clue what's going on either. So that needs to change.
It does. It definitely does. I mean, as you say, the communication needs to be far better. And it's just allowing the coaches and the players to be involved with what is going on. I mean, there's if you know the reasoning behind a decision, and also then it allows the referee to say, well, this is what I thought. Mm-hmm. This is why I've made my decision.
Yeah.
And then you can say, okay, fair enough. You know, and if they've made a mistake, they've made a mistake. Mm-hmm. But I've always thought this about referees prior to VAR. Mm-hmm. If there was sort of some statements after certain decisions, and even if a referee said, you know what, I got it wrong.
What do you say to that?
It's just like, okay, people make mistakes, you know, mm-hmm. that's it. But just the lack of silence the silence doesn't help. And it just allows people to make their own mind up and judgment, and it just snowballs from there.
Yeah. Ah, well, speaking of silence, after all that blether, I think it's time we shut up. So thank you very much for joining us this week. And actually, I'll be leading again next week, Eric, so for a fortnight. A fortnight in the Speedos.
Any Speedos are falling. I need to go home and lie down and thought of that. Dear.
Absolutely. We can get a mind wipe. Anyway, right, thanks very much for joining us, and we will be back next week. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people to find Talking Football, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget too to pick up your copy of The Courier Monday to Saturday, or go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe to find out how to get our award-winning sport, business and local journalism across Tayside and Fife in the way that's right for you. The Courier. local matters.